Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
This is ESPN Radio's Barton Hahn Podcast.
Yes, it's Major League Baseball trade deadline day. And yes, we have big news there. But that's not the only news coming down the pipeline, as the NFL is back in the news for punishment reasons. Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app. Braden Gall, Jason Fitz hanging out in for the guys. We're presented by Progressive. And don't forget to thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They're close, convenient, and known for guaranteed everyday low prices and excellent customer service from professional parts people you can trust. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. There's big news, Braden. The NFL has suspended and fined Miami Dolphins owner Stephen Ross $1.5 million for violations relating to the integrity of the game. Basically, what this comes down to is they investigated tampering with Tom Brady. They found proof of that. They investigated tampering with Sean Payton when he was still with the Saints. They found proof of that. They say they also investigated tanking and conveniently found no proof of that. So as a result, they take a little money and they take two draft picks, 2023 first round pick, 2024 third round pick. So obviously that is them saying, hey, we looked into this, we found something.
Yeah, a lot of different ways to make sure you look at this. First of all, when you read that sentence and you start with like, the NFL has suspended and fined ... and you're like, wait a second, what's been going on in the league this last couple of weeks? Yeah. No, we're talking about the Dolphins here, actually. No, it's, first of all, like, let's just go with, I'm not talking about the, like, to your point, the tanking or even Brian Flores' accusations. Let's just say, for example, like, how can you keep Brian Flores and Tom Brady from having a conversation? Like, these are two people that knew each other for a long time, that worked together for a long time in the same company, in the same business. How do you keep human beings in sports that have known each other and have relationships and have cell phones and text messaging? How do you keep this kind of stuff from happening? Like, I think it's almost impossible to disprove or prove tampering here. Now, I understand the league has a very strong and strict policy on the integrity of the game. I get why they want that. The gambling aspect of it is obviously a huge part of it as well. And so I understand why that's a separate bucket than the Deshaun Watson player personal conduct policy. So I get all of that. It just strikes me, two picks, a first-round draft pick and a third-round draft pick, $1.5 million, all of that on with the backdrop of the Deshaun Watson conversation that has captured all of NFL football right now. It seems very odd to me that this is when a 6-month long investigation happens to come out the day after the Deshaun Watson ruling. Like, that strikes me as either odd or strange or bizarre or coincidental, I guess, Fitzy. That's the part that really, you know, trips me up a little bit.
Or, like so much in the NFL, just poorly thought out. And sometimes it just feels like the NFL is a bull in a china shop, you know. And I found myself, when we first saw the punishment, saying 2023 first-round pick, who cares? They have two of them. Like, I know that a first-round pick is significant. I don't want to downplay that. But you still have a first-round pick. But then I got to thinking about it, because you were, at the time, you know, you mentioned, hey, I think there's a lot of value to that. Kept thinking about the what if. And if you look at the Dolphins this season, who I think have the chance to be a very good football team, but in a stacked AFC, being very good is not going to mean anything. The Dolphins are a very good football team with so many expectations on their quarterback right now, Tua Tagovailoa. It raises a question of what if Tua doesn't develop. If Tua doesn't develop the way they want next year, which we're already enamored with the draft class, is going to be a very, very, very competitive quarterback draft class. Going from one pick to two, or for two picks to one, I should say, in the first round, loses a ton of their leverage to try and move up should they want to acquire one of those quarterbacks at the top of the draft. The Dolphins are not going to be bad enough to be picking in the top five, in my mind, unless things go catastrophically wrong. So they're going to be stuck in the middle of the pack. Their dream quarterback may not be there. So there is significance, in my mind now, of taking that draft pick, because it makes it harder for them next year if they need to move up and get somebody that can be behind center for them for the next 20 years.
Yeah, a first-round pick and a third-round pick is like Russell Wilson's right arm and his torso. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's what you can get for a first-round pick and a third-round pick. You need another first, and you need, like, maybe a fifth, and then you can get all of Russell Wilson. But, like, that's the value. That's half a starting quarterback right there. And to your point about trading up in the draft, if you do believe – now, I would argue that there's a loaded quarterback draft class next year that's very different than the one we just saw go through the draft process, and I think you're going to see five, six, maybe even seven guys talked about as first-round draft picks. So I think there is a chance to get a really good player in that 8 to 18 range, but we're so far down the road from that there's no way to know. So again, this strikes me as an, like, if you try to compartmentalize it, Fitzy, and you go just integrity of the game, Calvin Ridley a year for gambling, however much money it was, you know, he broke the rules, he knew the rules, integrity of the game, tampering, you know, again, how do you determine whether or not a team intentionally tried to lose or not? Like, if you just bench a guy, does that count as intentionally trying to lose? Like, I don't know how you legislate that. So I don't find any fault there, but $1.5 million and two draft picks for some like text conversations you might've had with Tom Brady when we know it's almost impossible to stop that from happening. Meanwhile, Deshaun Watson, six games and like $350,000 in potential lost revenue. Like, it just, the whole entire thing feels so tone deaf to what's actually going on in the conversation around the league. I understand they have to be separate. I understand they're in different buckets and they're legally separated. I get all of that. It just seems so odd that this is the day, this is the morning, this is the afternoon that we have this conversation about Miami.
I wonder if they realistically can be in different buckets. Like, sometimes you spend so much time in life trying to explain to somebody why this is different than what they think, that eventually you got to look around and say, hey, we're losing that battle. If you're the NFL, integrity of the game is handled totally differently. And, you know, then you've got personal conduct is a total different bucket also. And trying to explain that every single time, there's
some sort of... Deflating footballs is different. That's a different bucket.
And maybe... as much as that makes sense to somebody like me that compartmentalizes so much, like, I'm the guy that at Thanksgiving eats all of one food and then all of the, like, don't commingle my food, right? Like, so I understand the concept of like, hey, we're going to have 10 buckets out here and you can only go to each of those buckets. And I'm the person that would tell my whole group of friends that. And then I would stand there just spinning myself up like a top the whole time saying like, they're not following the bucket rules. They're not following. Like, well, I get it, right, but maybe you can't in public perception actually do that.
No, you're 100% right. Like, if you're a football fan and you love NFL football, or look at all the garbage that college football is going through right now with realignment and NIL and the drama and the expanded playoff and everything, like all this stuff that's happening, like, as a fan of that game, the NFL, like, it's all part of your consumption of content. Like, it's all part of your entertainment value, right? Like, every aspect of this is all into one bucket. I'm an NFL fan who loves the game. I want to watch on Thursdays and Saturdays and Sundays and Mondays and everything else. Like, you're not, it's only separated legally for the NFL office and for people behind closed doors. Like, that's the only place it's actually separated. So again, this is what goes back to, why didn't this come out at Friday at 4 o'clock? Which, of course, if it does, we would, you know, hey, look, convenient, you put it out at Friday at 4 o'clock. Like, we might give you a hard time about that in the media, but at least that to me would allow space for the Deshaun Watson conversation to continue. I know it's exhausting. But until they rule, and until they decide on the NFL, that is, on whether or not they're going to appeal the six-game suspension by 9 a.m. on Thursday, to me, that is the all-consuming thing that people want to talk about if you were a fan of the NFL. And this, to me, it could have waited till Friday.
Yeah, there is no doubt in my mind. Also, from all of this, if I'm the Saints, I'm not happy. Like, we always talk about the good old boys club that is NFL ownership and how they sort of look out for each other in some ways and seem to have enough skeletons in each other's closets that they'll protect each other. If I'm the Saints, I got plenty to say at this point to the Dolphins. Like, coming after my coach when he's under contract, when you know that we're about to go through a rebuild, when things are about to look much different as a franchise, and you're trying to entice him in that pro- like, I've got issues at the next owners meeting if I'm the Saints and I'm looking over at Stephen Ross.
And let's be very clear, we as football fans shouldn't, like, be rooting for this type of stuff to happen, right? Like, it's not like we're condoning the behavior at all. Like, I don't think tampering should be a thing. You shouldn't be breaking rules. Like, I go back to, how do you stop two adults who happen to have a relationship with each other from communicating when we are attached to our phones at all times? Like, I don't know how you stop that from happening, Fitzy. Like, I get it. Like, some people will be guided by their moral compass in all of this and won't break rules. But we're talking about a $1 billion industry here.
Like, yeah.
A Super Bowl championship is worth so much to everybody in your organization, not just the good feelings, it's worth so much money. And so I like, when the stakes are pretty high, you're going to always see people push boundaries. And I don't know how you stop two humans that know each other from texting each other. I don't know.
It's also wildly cute to me for everybody to sit here and think, oh, my moral compass, I would never do these things. I would never break these rules. And then somebody, like, if somebody, you work a widget company and the competing company sends you a text today, is like, hey man, I'll triple your salary if you want to come over here. You're not saying, well, like, I got, you know, a process I got to go through. Like,
I'm just saying, HR.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Speaking of wild news, we've got breaking news, obviously, today in the form of a mega trade, and we need some expertise in Major League Baseball. It's trade deadline day. 6 p.m. Eastern is when we get there. So we're going to bring in some expertise now. Bart and Hahn on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80. Braden Gall, Jason fits in for the guys. Jesse Rogers, ESPN Major League Baseball reporter, joining us. So what is the latest as we continue to try and break down exactly what the Juan Soto deal looks like? How has all this played out? Where are we right now?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Soto going to the Padres, basically for all prospects. There's a part of it that might include Eric Hosmer, but that's just a salary dump by San Diego. I was a little surprised by that. I thought the Nats might want some major league, you know, proven players, right? Because prospects are prospects, but these are high-end prospects. And what is it, five or six of them going back to the Nats. And there's a couple that I probably can't miss, so I get that. I was a little surprised it wasn't more of a mix of major leaguers and minor leaguers. But then again, if you trade for a major leaguer, his clock has already started towards free agency. Here, the Nationals can just kind of bring these guys up on their own accord and let them grow. You have a player for 6 years before he becomes a free agent. So it's a massive prospect haul, probably the biggest we've seen at the deadline. And it gives, obviously, the Padres one of the best generational players to come along at only 23 years old. It's clearly a move to compete with the Dodgers. Like, I'll give A.J. Preller credit. He is trying his best to compete with the big boys up the road in Southern California from him. And, you know, they're not going to catch him in the division this year, but they certainly might see him in the playoffs. So Juan Soto could be a difference maker.
Jesse, that to me, that's the big question here. You add Juan Soto and Josh Bell to a lineup that is fairly old, but now you add some young talent to it. You're 12 games back at the Dodgers. You got the Mets. You got the Braves. What are the other teams around the National League now? How do they view San Diego through all of this?
They're going to be a tough out. I mean, they've got starting pitching, and they've got those three guys, Tatis coming back from injury, Machado and Soto. Now, not all plans work out perfectly. You have to hope, if you're a Padre fan, that Tatis comes back and looks like the old Tatis. Sometimes it takes a little time to get going. And for him, the season might be over by the time he catches that lightning in a bottle. So, look, they're formidable, not just right now, but moving forward. They're going to be a wild card team. That already puts them behind the Dodgers. So it's not just about this pennant race, which is huge. It's about having Soto for the next 2 years, and then who knows, maybe they sign him up and have Tatis and him for the next 15 years. So I think it makes them formidable, but doesn't make them unbeatable. Like I'm writing something for ESPN.com. I don't put them ahead of the Dodgers right now. They have to prove it. They have to beat the Dodgers out in the playoffs or the regular season for me to say the Padres are the better team. They've arrived. One player doesn't get it done. They do have a trio, but you have to pitch. You have to do some other things. So they're formidable, but let's see it play out before we say it's the end all be all. Because again, Tatis has been out all season, but this is really about the future as it is the present as well. It's going to be a dominant trio to have for the next couple of years at least.
We're talking to Jesse Rogers on Bart and Hahn. Braden Gall, Jason fits in for the guys. Big news, Juan Soto headed to the Padres. So you mentioned contract for the next couple of years. Do you have any indication at this point of if there's been a talk between the Padres, what Soto's looking for? Can they keep him long term?
I think they can keep him long term. I'm not sure that they will. I mean, this goes back to the agent and a bidding war that could happen. You know, in a couple of years, you get the Yankees involved, you get the Dodgers involved. So I'm not sure there's really, well, I shouldn't say any number that'll get it done right now. But I doubt they would trade for him in this huge thing and then 2 days later announce a $500 million commitment. That's probably going to wait. And if we know Scott Boras, more than likely they'd take him to free agency. But look, I don't know. A.J. Preller might step up. Ownership has certainly proven they stepped up for Tatis and Machado. They easily could. But you just get this feeling that at that level, the Yankees and Dodgers are eventually going to be involved, and Scott Boras knows that.
Jesse, let's look at what some of the counter moves could be in the National League. I'd like to know what you think, if anything, the Dodgers do to counter this, again, with a 12-game lead in the division. But as a lifelong suffering New York Mets fan who doesn't want them to do anything because then as soon as they do, they'll be completely irrelevant after that, I have problems, Jesse. It's fine. Don't worry about it. What are the counter moves for the other teams? I know the Braves are doing some stuff as well. What happens in the National League now that San Diego's made the big move?
Yeah, it's real interesting because that's the only move San Diego will make, right? Before this happened, San Diego was involved in a lot of other things. So let's take Juan Soto out of the mix. San Diego obviously was looking to be aggressive. They probably would have a couple, three other players from other teams. So now the Cubs, for example, San Diego was in on Ian Happ and Wilson Contreras and David Robertson, the closer. Now you take them out of the mix, and other teams can sort of get the leftovers, right? And the Mets are one of those teams. I'd be surprised. I'll say surprised, not shocked, but surprised if the Mets don't end up with Wilson Contreras. They need an upgrade behind the plate. He can provide it for them. I'd be surprised if he's not a Met, but he could be a Tampa Bay Ray. The Atlanta Braves were interested in Ian Happ, so now that can advance maybe. The Blue Jays were interested in Ian Happ as well. So, yeah, there's some leftovers to be had. The Mets involved, the Blue Jays, the Rays, the Braves. I think they were all involved in players that the Padres wanted. Now the Padres are out of the mix. That eliminates them. And, yeah, you're going to see a fallout soon enough. We still have 5 hours or so. But look for the Cubs to have that sell-off. A couple other teams. I think the Rangers are going to move some pitchers. I think the Twins are going to add. I think the White Sox are going to add. So I think Soto was holding up a certain segment of the sort of trade situation here, and now it's going to open up a little bit. We're going to see a bunch of teams, including the Mets, grab some players.
Some players, though, Jesse, and I need your education here, because when you talk about leftovers and things like that, these are all players that can make a difference. Is there somebody out there that you think by the end of today, we're looking at it, other than Juan Soto, we're looking at it and say, wow, that is an acquisition that suddenly makes this team much more viable for a World Series?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple that could happen, or at least in my mind. Like, if Carlos Rodon is moved to, like, the Cardinals, that elevates them in a big way. Pujols, Molina, Wainwright's last year. I don't know if he's going to get moved. The Cardinals could use a top-end rotation starter. So if not him, if they can get one, that elevates St. Louis in a big way. I mean, this is pie in the sky, but I think the Cleveland Guardians could win the division if they traded for Wilson Contreras, for example. They have terrible offensive catchers, and that division's there to be won. I think the Mets, it's more about sort of just holding on to what they are if they trade for Wilson Contreras or Ian Happ or David Robertson. They're already in first place. I do think they're going to win the division, but this could elevate them into October if they get one of these guys. You know, the Yankees have made their moves. The Astros have made their moves. Those are the teams with the big leads. I'm not sure what more the Dodgers can do. So I'm trying to think of like a second place team that could really elevate. St. Louis is one. Cleveland's one. I think the Mets need to bolster their bullpen and maybe and trade for Wilson Contreras, and that really maybe elevates them in October more so than right now. I think they're good enough to win it right now, especially if DeGrom comes back healthy. So that's kind of what I'm thinking here. If Rodon moves, like, to Minnesota, that really elevates them as well as St. Louis. But Montas getting traded and the other, you know, the other starting pitchers that have moved already, I think have already proven to be, you know, Luis Castillo, the big difference makers for some of these teams that are below the elite teams. We'll see what happens the rest of the day. But there's not that much starting pitching left to go at the top end. So if someone gets one, that could elevate them.
So take me to the other side of it then. Make it make sense what the Orioles are thinking. They're just outside the wild card. They trade two important players. What is their strategy right now?
The strategy is being realistic. I hate it. I think it's sad that you don't show some faith into a team that has done this. But I think they know we're not winning the World Series. Let's start with that. Are we even getting close to it? Probably not. Like, they're being realistic, even though they're exceeding expectations now. What's to say they won't the rest of the way? So I just think they're thinking about the future. They're thinking about the future. It's kind of what Milwaukee did with Josh Hader. Yeah, we're trying to win now. We also have to think about the future and keep this thing going. We've seen some weird deals. But that's what some of the smaller markets have to think about, like the now and the future, to keep the thing going. And then if you catch lightning in a bottle in October, you still have a chance to win it, thinking of Milwaukee. I just think that Baltimore doesn't realistically think they have a chance to win anything right now. They're building something. It's a good foundation. But they got some pieces for these trades, and I think that's what they're thinking.
So if they're not anywhere close in the American League, how do you handicap the American League right now?
Well, the American League is very interesting. I love watching this AL Central fight. It's like the middleweight fight, because none of those teams are very good. Minnesota, Cleveland, White Sox, they're not any of the world beaters. Look, I think it's Houston and the Yankees, like everyone, unless one of them gets upset along the way. I kind of like Houston. As good as the Yankees are, I think I want to see those righties in the playoffs. If Stanton, Judge, and those right-handers can beat Houston's pitching, then I'll be very impressed. Right-handed pitching, elite pitching, can neutralize right-handed elite hitting. And that's why you've seen Brian Cashman go out desperately and trade for Rizzo, trade for Gallo. Okay, that didn't work. Let's bring in Matt Carpenter. Let's bring in Benintendi. You need left-handed punch to win a World Series. The top two left-handed hitting teams in the postseason last year, the Astros and the Braves, they were your World Series contenders. So I think Houston has the better left-handed hitting. I like Houston a little bit better than the Yankees, but I'm not sure if anyone else can upset them. Obviously, in a short series, anything can happen. But it's a lot of, like, secondary teams in Seattle, Cleveland, White Sox, Minnesota. You know, maybe Toronto if they get hot. But even Toronto's a little too right-handed for my liking. So I like Houston the most because they have the most balance and they have elite right-handed pitching.
Jesse, real quick before we let you go, any scenario where Shohei gets dealt today?
No. That was the feeling-out process that a lot of teams do in July. I almost thought that Juan Soto, Mike Rizzo, you know, Mike Rizzo was doing that with Juan Soto, feeling it out, and then he would trade him in December. But that became so public that I finally realized, okay, he's actually going to do it. I think the Angels are in a sort of what are we mode. Let's feel some things out, and then we'll go to December, the winter meetings, and really revamp our team.
Nobody does it better. Follow him on Twitter at Jesse Rogers ESPN. Jesse, always appreciate your time, especially on a day like today, my friend. Thanks for hanging out with us.
You got it. Anytime. Take care.
Jesse will have an article up on ESPN.com in just a little bit. They're doing a great job there of covering all of the trade deadline action. So get out, check it out, and then again, follow him on Twitter to keep up with everything. All right. Reaction from Deshaun Watson is coming from around the league. You'll hear some of it. We're going to do some audio files. You'll hear for some really famous people, and we'll react to it. That's next. Barton Hahn, Braden Gall, Jason Fitz filling in on ESPN Radio.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Bart and Hahn.
No one's happy with this right now, it seems like. I don't think anyone feels as though there's resolution.
I find this incredibly difficult to square with her ultimate conclusion, which was based on Preston, but also her own interpretation that what took place was not violent.
98% of judges would have done the same thing because their job is to interpret this agreement. And the problem is this agreement does not respect women enough.
It's Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and of course on your smart speakers. Jason Fitzbraden Golf filling in for the guys. You might not have the biggest garage on the block, but with eBay Motors, there's 122 million parts right at your fingertips. Whatever you need, there's something that fits your vehicle. Air filters, tires, seat covers, and more. Get the right parts at the right prices. ebaymotors.com. Let's ride. All right. We've been talking a lot about all things, obviously, all things Deshaun Watson. It's been a big conversation across all of ESPN. But thought we'd have a little bit of fun and let you hear from some other people and get their thoughts on it. Some famous people. Let's do some audio files.
The audio file.
All right, so as you know, right now across the landscape, everybody that stands in front of a microphone for the NFL is likely to be asked questions about it. Baker Mayfield was asked, the Panthers quarterback, was asked about the Deshaun Watson situation and had this to say.
That honestly is none of my business. I don't play against the other quarterback. I know it's the most cliche thing to say, but that's just the truth. When it comes down to it, I'm game planning against their defense. And if I'm playing or not, I'm trying to help this team win. And that's my mindset going into it. So I got to keep getting better. But I'm not focused about week one right now. I'm working on each day, each install, and continuing to get better. And we'll handle that when it comes. But for now, it's about getting the Panthers better and our offense continuing to get better as well.
Braden, that feels about like the only answer he could or should give at that point.
I love that answer. It's a very mature, professional, adult starting quarterback answer. I like that. That's good work by Baker. Also, he's right in the middle of a genuine quarterback battle, which is something we don't normally see in the NFL, where you have two legitimate number ones, like, well, you know what I mean. going head-to-head in like an actual cup. That's like a college football thing. It's actually really entertaining to watch what the Panthers are doing.
I constantly say, much to the chagrin of people in my life, it's easier to drive when you stay in your own lane. That's just like a thing. Like, I can't worry about everybody else's drama. At some point, especially if you're Baker Mayfield, you got enough on your plate right now. Of course, that's from a quarterback standpoint. What about from a coach's standpoint? John Harbaugh, the Ravens head coach, was asked for his reaction, and this is what he had to say.
I do have a lot of opinions on it. I'm not at liberty to share them at this time, but that's for the league to decide. I respect what Steve Bisciotti has created here and Dick Cass really almost 10 years ago. And basically what we decided, Steve and Dick decided, and we're all still here. Ozzie, Eric, Pat Moriarty, that were involved in that. And basically, we're kind of a zero tolerance. I mean, you got to know the truth. You got to try to understand the circumstances. But we've stayed away from that particular situation. When we draft players, when we sign them as free agents, we just haven't dealt with it. And that's Steve's decision, and I'm glad we have that policy.
I mean, he's not wrong in what he's saying, and it makes a lot of sense. And it is a cultural decision that organizations have to make.
First of all, I give him a lot of credit for like sort of saying I'm not going to say anything and then says some things. So I like that. You also you're painting yourself into a corner to some degree in the future, right? Like you're saying we've got a zero tolerance policy. So if anything ever happens to your starting quarterback, you're going to have to be prepared to act because now you're kind of on the record for what you said. But otherwise, I think it's a great statement. I commend him for having the stones to kind of come out and say what he said, even if he was saying I'm not really saying it.
You mentioned earlier, everybody has a different sort of moral line in the sand. I will continue to echo the fact that my heart breaks for a lot of Browns fans right now. Like, I don't think Browns fans necessarily all know how to process it. I think Browns fans, there are some Browns fans that are going to be great with it. They don't care. There's going to be some Browns fans that are absolutely out. And then there's going to be a bunch of in-the-middle fans. And I can only say that if Deshaun Watson was the quarterback of the Raiders, I would be heartbroken right now because it would be such a difficult thing to process how to root for my favorite team when I don't feel like I can root for that individual necessarily. So, like, that is I have a ton of, when you step back and say, man, I'm thankful for my organization. Like, if you're a Ravens fan, you can be thankful not only that you win a bunch of games, but that policy prevents you from being in that situation. So certainly that's something to stand on. Let's see now. Obviously, Tony Busby, for anybody that doesn't know, is the attorney that's been representing the women that have made the accusations against Deshaun Watson. He was on First Take this morning, and Christine Williamson, the great host here, asked him what this judgment says about the NFL and their care about women. This is what the attorney had to say.
Exact same thing I said 15 months ago, I can say now the NFL has no interest, does not care about the rights of women. They care about the bottom line. They care about making money. They're trying to manage this as a PR crisis. But as far as trying to do anything to assuage these particular women or women's rights or dealing with women's rights in general, that's not part of their mission statement. And they've made that very clear throughout this process.
I mean, I understand where he's coming from. Also, this is complex because we don't have transparency. We don't know exactly why the NFL picked the five and then albeit four cases that they presented to the judge. We don't know why the NFL only talked to 12 of the 24 people that have filed lawsuits. We don't know what their decision-making process was like. And I say it all the time about athletes. If they don't speak to the media, then the media often speaks for them. Well, if the NFL doesn't transparently speak to the world, then we're going to make best inferences from the information we do have, and that information doesn't look great for the league.
Yeah, and this is where what they do up until 9 a.m. on Thursday, which is the amount of time they have to make a decision on, is Roger Goodell going to go over the top of the six games and implement some other kind of punishment? And Tony Busby's right. This is a PR crisis because it's not a criminal proceeding anymore. It's not a civil proceeding anymore. This is about PR. And so it's, what do you care about? What do you want to stand for? And what are you going to do about it? And that's it. That's where the NFL is right now. They have to decide what they care about, what they stand for, and what they're going to do. And then, you know, then they have to deal with the consequences after that. But to your point, and to his, this is about PR. This is about losing some fans, and I just don't know in society if we are a society that, you know, that creates ramifications for behavior like this the way we should. I'm cynical in this sense.
I think that's a really important point, though. Like, I don't know, because what you just said is very real. The number of times, every time there's an issue with the NFL, the group that it feels that they've been forgotten by the NFL comes out and says, I'll never watch another game. We're going to watch the league crash and burn. And then what did we get last year? A report of record earnings from TV content. Like, we're talking about, I think it was $4.4 billion in earnings, a new high. So every time somebody says, this will be the death of the NFL, I will never watch again, everybody just keeps watching, and the money keeps going up. And when there's no incentivizing actual action, if you're the league, you can say whatever you want, put a little smile on it, and know that it's like Charlie Brown. You just move the football, they'll keep running for it, keep trying to kick it. And I'm part of the problem. I'm the first to admit, y'all, I am part of the problem, because I can say whatever I want about the legs I want to stand on, but man, when the Raiders play, I sit down and I watch, and it consumes my entire life. Brayden, like, I am willing to admit it. We'll keep breaking.
Will you draft him on your fantasy team? That's the question.
No, I will not.
There's your line.
Is that taking a stand? I don't know. My fantasy teams always suck, though. All right. Speaking from the fantasy side to the real side, the question is, what makes all of this worth it for the Browns organization? We're going to try and answer that next. Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio. Brayden Gall, Jason Fitz in for the guys. Also on Sirius XM, Channel 80.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Bart and Hahn.
Spartan Hahn on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app. Brayden Gall, Jason Fitz in for the guys. Brayden, I think I'm going to drink too much this fall.
Oh.
Let's just be real. Like, we keep talking about Deshaun and the Browns, but there's another whole portion of this conversation, which is that the AFC is wildly stacked this year. Like, and the craziest part about it is, you can make a pretty compelling argument, I think, that out of the 16 teams in the AFC, I think there's probably about 12 that have a realistic playoff shot. Maybe even 13, 14 of them could go on a run and at least find themselves. Like, a team's going to win 10 games this year and not make the playoffs, at which point they're going to blow everything up, fire everybody, and start a whole restructure. Like, this is the inevitability. Like, I should feel good about Derek Carr and the Raiders, and I feel like they're going to be a very good team, but I have no idea if that matters this year.
Yeah, and over time, isn't it about half, right? About half of the teams that make the playoffs the year before are cycled through the next year, right? It's roughly about half of them. I mean, look, the Baltimore Ravens, the Indianapolis Colts, the Los Angeles Chargers, and the Denver Broncos, those four teams did not make the playoffs last year.
Oh, my God.
All four of them have a very real chance of making it. The Miami Dolphins have a chance to be a 9 or 10 win team. And if Cleveland has Deshaun Watson for the majority of the season, which it looks like as of right now he might be, then Cleveland is another. Like, you, I'm with you. There are 13 teams that can make the playoffs. I would take the Jags, the Texans, and the Jets off the table. Everyone else is a playoff contender, and I have never seen anything like that in the AFC, and it is because the quarterback position is, it's unconscionable, Fitzy, how good the quarterback position is in the AFC.
Like, you start thinking about all four teams from a division making the playoffs, which I think is something we've talked about with the West. I think really is possible. I've got the Chargers as the cream of the crop in that division. Everybody else fighting for a wild card. But the AFC North deserves to be in that conversation, too. Like, what we saw from Joe Burrow last year, there's no reason to put any doubt on it. So now you've got a Steelers team that doesn't have a quarterback, but they went 9-7-1 last year with nothing at quarterback, right? So
you'd argue they didn't have a quarterback last year.
Exactly. And like, the Ravens had more games lost by starters to injury than any team in the NFL and still finished 8-9. Like, if they stay healthy, the Ravens could win 12, 13 games. Like, every team in that division could make the playoffs.
The Ravens and the Chargers could win the Super Bowl and they didn't make the playoffs last year. The Broncos could win the Super Bowl and didn't make the playoffs last year. That is how deep this league is, and that is how important Deshaun Watson is to the Cleveland Browns.
There's never been any greater example of any given Sunday than there is this year, because I'm not sure there are a lot of cupcakes on anybody's schedule. Every single week, it's going to be about what quarterback are we playing, can you score enough points, and my God, do you have a pass rush? Like, this AFC this year is going to be unbelievable, and it's going to probably send me to rehab. We'll keep breaking it down next.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Bart and Han.
I find this incredibly difficult to square with her ultimate conclusion, which was based on Preston, but also her own interpretation that what took place was not violent.
I don't think anyone feels as though there's resolution.
It's Bart and Han on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM channel 80, and on your smart speakers. Jason Fitz, Braden Gall, in for the guys. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. This fall might send me to rehab. I got one day off in the fall, and that's Sundays. It's the only day I don't work. And I don't work because I sit back and I watch my beloved Raiders. But, you know, Braden, you and I have known each other for a lot of years, and we've been friends for a long time. And for as long as we've been friends, I've always had one thing that I've preached when it comes to teams in the NFL. Like, when you and I first started working together on the radio in Nashville, the Titans had Marcus Mariota. And I remember the first week that we were ever on 102.5 The Game together, and we were 3 days in. And as we were leaving, I was like, dude, we have spent 3 days talking about Marcus Mariota. What are we talking about tomorrow? And you just looked at me and you're like, Marcus Mariota. So, like, we know that we're in a quarterback-obsessed world. And when you have a quarterback that you think gives you a chance, you come into every season with the level of tremendous optimism. So, like, me, I'm a believer that Derek Carr can be very, very good. So, as a lifelong diehard Raiders fan, I believe my beloved Raiders have a shot at the playoffs this year because I think they have a quarterback that, when he's surrounded by the best weapons, can be one of the best. I think he can have a killer year. I feel great about it. The question is, for Browns fans, with all the talent that's on this roster and the yeah, but that's going to come with Deshaun Watson, what level of success actually makes it worth it? Because we were just talking about, you could win 10 games in the playoffs this year or in the AFC this year and not make the playoffs. There's too many good teams. So if the Browns turn around in 3 years and they've won 9, 10, 11 games every year and they might have won a playoff game here or there, is that like, is that, if they essentially had the same level of success as the Titans have, a team you and I know well, hasn't gone to the Super Bowl, had a number one seed here and there, but never really met the expectations, was all this worth it?
I'm going to use a Fitzy type of word here, and I'm going to say that this question is just icky. It's just an icky question, and I'm going to channel my inner Jason Fitz when I say that. Because here's the deal for me when I think about this. I try to put myself... No matter what happens, you win a Super Bowl. You win multiple Super Bowls, let's say, with Deshaun Watson. It does not matter what you accomplish over the next 2 to 6 years, let's say, whatever the amount of time is that Deshaun Watson is the quarterback in Cleveland. It doesn't matter what you accomplish. The story about this era of Browns football with him as your quarterback will start with this story. The first sentence in the Wikipedia page on the 2026 Cleveland Browns Super Bowl championship team is going to be Deshaun Watson accused by 30 people of sexual impropriety. Like, that is, it doesn't matter. The documentary, ESPN does a 30 for 30 on the Cleveland Browns Super Bowl championship team from 3 years from now. It will have to focus on this part of the story no matter what. So this is where Browns fans have to sort of realize what's at stake here, right? Like, you could have all that success. You could have all that fun. You could win the Super Bowl. But if it's still going to have, like, I hate saying asterisk Fitzy, you know what I mean? But, like,
yeah, but I think
it is part of the story. It's baked in now to the DNA of the story.
And, you know, I'll be real with the level of fan I am. And maybe I'm too, maybe I'm, like, way too jaded on this. I think if you went to most fan bases and said, by the way, your quarterback is going to be guilty of these, include these 30, whatever. It doesn't matter. Like, hey, by the way, your quarterback may have killed somebody on the way to the Super Bowl, but you win the Super Bowl. Most fans would be like, okay, I'll figure that out. Like, I think most people would take a Super Bowl over humanity most of the time. Like, I think what we would do, and again, I'm just speaking as my own fan, but I think that my fandom is more common than a lot of people ever are comfortable admitting. I think what we would do is compartmentalize it all. We would, as we get away from it, we'd find reason to talk less about that, and it becomes more about just the rings that are happening through this process. Like, it's easier in baseball. You know, Sarah Spain has talked in the past about, you know, Aroldis Chapman was not easy to root for, but it was easy to root for the Cubs and hope. I hope the Cubs are great, but I hope Aroldis Chapman's terrible, for example. I could see fans compartmentalizing that. In the NFL, you can't really root against your favorite team's quarterback because that means your team's going to stink. So you're going to have to compartmentalize it. But I do believe, and again, maybe I'm too callous, I believe most fans, if you told them they were going to have a dynastic era like the Patriots have had, for example, or 4 or 5 years of continual playoff success and some Super Bowls in there, I'm not sure there's a violation that they wouldn't trade for.
Yeah, and I'm not suggesting that somebody who is capable of that compartmentalization is like some awful, terrible, you know, human being. I think people are totally capable of that. I just think at that position, especially for that franchise, which has not accomplished any of the things that they've been trying to accomplish for 50, 60, 70 years, I know you can do it. I know it can be done. It's got to be extremely difficult if you have any sense at all about the safety of women in our society to be standing up and rooting for Deshaun Watson. It's
even more complicated, Braden. Even more complicated is if they win 8 or 9 games, if it takes them a while to knock the rust off. Like, I keep thinking about the way Browns fans talked to me when I first started saying, negative things about Baker Mayfield. And now how do they feel about Baker? Like, I'm not sure how they'll feel about Deshaun if it doesn't result in epic results on the field. We have epic news in baseball. We'll get you caught up on huge moves today. Next, Bart and Hahn on ESPN Radio.
Bart and Hahn.